No, it's good.
We can cuss on this fucking podcast.
I think.
What's up? How you doing, Adam?
What up, Neil?
Dude, intro music. I'm great. Kevin effing Scaff killed that shit.
Thank you. Dude, I hit up a few different people. He's actually the only one who hit me back in time. And I was like, can you make like a metal version of The Wheels on the Bus? And I actually learned how to play it on my computer online and try to do that like with a synth thing. It didn't work. And Kevin's like, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. He hits me back the next day and goes, I spent 6 hours.
He's so good. I think that like these opportunities are what he was crafted for as a human being. Hey, do this. He's like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I'll just spend. He's like, I didn't have anything to do anyway. I was like, perfect. Thank you, Corona.
I just got to visit him when I went up to David, our drum tech's property. He has one of the nicest studios I've ever been to, and it's just in his house. And he made this entire intro in 6 hours. It's kind of incredible.
Yeah, he played everything, did everything. Kevin is the other guitarist in Neil's band.
He's the guitarist in my band. I just kind of happen to play guitar in the band as well.
But you fill in the empty spots for him. But yeah, welcome to episode 2, week 2. We're not going to quit,
so you might as well get on board. But don't shit while you're here, because we're going to be on the bus.
Yeah, we're going to be on the bus. Get on the bus. Come hang out. I'm trying to talk to my microphone correctly. Neil, I heard I wanted it at a 45-degree angle from my mouth for my mic. So I think this is right.
We're going to learn so many skills. So you, as we teach people about touring, you're going to learn about audio engineering and capturing audio through a microphone with your voice. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I'll be really good at interviews. If I ever get interviewed,
that is a skill that people don't know they need. Like, this podcast will teach you tons of skills that you did not know you need. Like, we're going to go into all of those things. Like, you will be able to utilize this skill of recording yourself vocally if you ever wanted to record playing music. Yeah, whatever. It's going to sound beautiful. And then the person hearing is going to be like, wow, I can hear every part of his voice so beautifully. There's no
popping. I'll send it to Connor. Connor will make it nice, nice, nice.
S's. None of that.
Yeah. We edited last week's audio while I was doing my laundry at a laundromat with Steve and Connor on a joint FaceTime call.
You guys are all badass.
That's how DIY we are. But we're trying to make this more legit. Honestly, we set up a Patreon, and if you guys don't know what that is, it's basically like a small amount of money every time we put an episode out to just kind of support us. And we have little rewards. We don't have much yet, so if you're doing it now, just pick the lowest one. It's going to become a place that people can work together and get hired, and it'll be like a resource for people who want to go on tour, for people who are professional and entry level. So
join the Patreon.
Get in now. Every time somebody signs up for Patreon, Neil, no matter what level they sign up as, we're going to say their name before the podcast. So thank you, Ruth. You go.
Wait, thank you, Julie.
You do the next person.
Thank you, Marvin.
We got three. I'll take three. That's three more than zero.
How about this? If we grow in this increment every week, that's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, that's great, actually.
No. We grow three, and then we have six, and then we grow six, and then we have 12, and then we have 24, and then we have a fully
stocked bus. Wow. Yeah, cool. Come stock our bus, get on board. Let's hang out.
Each episode is $1.82.
$1.82 is the first one, and it's called Gen Pop. And then the second one is, I think it's called Van Tour or Van Life, and it's $2.44 because your favorite number is 44. And then the last one's $3.50 because I know you can say $3.50 like $3.50.
$3.50.
So I just did it like that.
When you join the Patreon, which I know you will, you also get access to our Discord, which is a really cool community of people that you can communicate with, and there'll be an entire plethora of topics that you can go in and communicate with and be a part of and have fun. Discord is rad.
Yeah, Discord will be, as this grows, it will grow. So it's in its beginning stages. But for starters, it'll have episode discussions. And then eventually, if you are a member on the higher tiers, you can submit Q&A for our Q&A episodes. And we'll try to just involve you a little more. The more invested you are, the more invested we will become. That's kind of the direction we're heading. First and foremost, if you sign up, we'll shout you out on our podcast.
And if you don't sign up, we're going to do nothing with you and forget that you exist as a human being. So I would choose the latter.
We only value people who give us money.
Shout out to Topo Chico.
Yo, I wanted to tell you something. First of all, Connor, you can chop that up as much as you want because we acknowledge that we went on for a long time. But we're giving you stuff to work with here, brother. Okay, last week you said Topo Chico and I had no idea what it was. And then I told somebody that I respect carbonation and they were like, oh, have you had Topo Chico? It's really carbonated. And I was like, I love spicy water, but I've never had it.
Topo Chico has the biggest bubbles. It's the best in the game. Yep.
Really? I saw stacks of it at the
I can get
store
us endorsed by Topo Chico. Yeah.
That might
is
be a bad
a
thing.
Producer. He recorded bands like Story So Far, 100th, tons of rad bands that you've listened to. He actually has a Topo Chico Connect. Don't hit him up for that because we're going to do that.
We'll bleep his name out.
We can get sponsored by them. He told me that he would help me out.
Wow. Let's do it. We had a good starting. Let's get down to business. This episode, we want to teach you what touring is, how to get there. And we realize that some people don't really know. Like they, we tell them touring, they're like, well, what is that? And if you do know, well, maybe you need a refresher. So we're kind of doing this to kind of make sure that everybody's on the same page, no matter what your background is or what bits and pieces you know. So the overview would be for today. I don't know if you want to knock it out.
The overview today is, what is touring? What qualifies someone to get on tour? What are the different jobs that exist touring? What does the actual hiring process look like in practice?
Yeah, so we just want to kind of like tell you, and you know, it sounds so basic. It's like touring. Well, it's touring. You go on tour, you hang out with your friends. But there's so much more to it, and it's not like anything else.
There's no
really.
Other thing. I mean, there's a ton of parallels in other industries, but it's really its own thing completely.
Yeah, it's its own beast.
And that's what this podcast is about. That is what the bones of this whole thing is we are going to create a index of information for you to take into the real world and apply to touring.
So without looking at the show notes, Neil, define what touring is to you, maybe in like a few sentences. If you could be like, somebody's like, what is touring?
Touring to me is a way of life. It is different than any other way of life. It is waking up in a new city every single day with a group of people that have an objective to roll into a place, set up a show, have the show successfully, tear down the show all together as a small community, and then roll to the next location. That is touring in a nutshell to me.
That's actually really good. I don't know why I'm acting surprised. I didn't expect like a not good answer.
Thank you.
But that was really good. Yeah, well done. Yeah, I had traveling on the road with a music group providing a crucial service that contributes to creating a good show.
I mean, essentially, in so many words, it's the same thing. It's you roll in with nothing. When you get there is nothing but a local crew to help you achieve your goal. You get there, you load in, you have the show successfully, you load out, and then you drink beers with your friends and celebrate the successes of the day. And then you go to sleep and do it again the next day.
Yeah, it's like a giant living organism of teamwork. Literally every part matters. Everybody has to work together. And if you're missing a piece, it becomes difficult.
If you're missing a piece, it could honestly be impossible. And that's why it's so important that every aspect works together. Every aspect is not afraid to get their hands dirty as far as, let's say the guitar tech needs a little bit extra help. Drum tech's like, no problem. I got that shit. So no one likes people that white glove shit. So the term white glove is a touring term, and it means that you only do your job. No one likes that shit. It's a big team. Like he said, it's a moving organism, and you can't live without every single piece of the organism working together, communicating. Exactly.
You got each other's backs.
Exactly.
No, that makes sense. And within the touring world, like I know you're saying, you know, you roll in and there's a, you know, it's a group of people and you put on a show, but there's so many different subcategories within that. And they're usually categorized by the type of music they are, because different types of music need a different set of structures to put on the show. So some examples would be like a DJ, for example, is it could just be them in a tour. It could just be them sometimes because they just roll up to a show with a USB stick and plug in and all this stuff could be taken care of.
And then you have a band. The band is much more involved as far as setup goes, whereas like the DJs, like you said, you have a thumb drive, get in there, you and a tour manager, the tour manager handles the business, you handle the creative and the fun part of the show. You guys are done afterwards, blah, blah, blah. The band is much more involved as far as it could be all the way down to club shows where it's you set your equipment up, play the show, roll out.
Like the band sets it up themselves. That's what you're saying.
Or yeah. It can be as like crazy as an arena show where you have a 40-person crew, you have techs for every single aspect of the entire show. It can be as involved as that. And that happens for 2 months on the long side, 3 months on the long side, or 2 weeks on the short side. You know, it is a...
Like how long the tour is, you mean? Or for Elton John,
that is
it's
true.
Like 3 years
I mean,
long.
It depends on the size of the group. When you're kind of getting involved in touring in the beginning, if you're going after a job, you kind of understand the position that you're applying for when you're applying for it. So it's like if you go and work for a band, let's say they're a new band, they just signed to a small indie label. It's going to be in a van it's going to be probably a smaller thing, maybe regional.
You're probably going to have to do
exactly
more than just your job title. It's very different. And then, so you have like DJ, which is like the extreme, the small side, and the band, which is more the big side because there's so many moving parts. And then you have some stuff in between, right? You have country music, which is a band, but they don't really do full tours all the time. They'll do like weekends or fly shows or festivals. And then you have rap or hip hop, which is often like a club show or a one-off. They'll do full tours. Like you have people like
ASAP Ferg, I went and saw him, or G-Eazy or Lil Uzi Vert. They do like massive tours. Travis Scott.
Or Travis Scott, who just made like a carnival of a festival. You know, they do big tours, but a lot of rappers and hip hop will do like, you know, a club show or an appearance or whatever, and they'll make good
similar
money
to
and they'll
a DJ.
Peace out. And it's a lot smaller crew. Yeah, similar to a DJ. So it's really about figuring out what you want to do and what type of world you want to get into, because they're all different.
I also think too, it's like what you are interested in. It is important what world you get into, because they all are hard, and they all are hard in different ways. You will have to deal with and put up with different aspects that kind of suck or other things that are pretty rad, but you have to be invested in that. So it's like, if you love rap music and you are invested in that as a fan and whatever, it might make more sense to be involved in that type of thing. And if you're into like rock music, whatever, you can kind of put up with those different nuances because that's what you're interested in. That's what you're invested in as a fan or just in general as a musician or a crew member, whatever.
Yeah, it's easier to go to bat for something that you really personally are a fan of. And I think people, maybe they aren't aware, they forget this, but everybody who works in music is a massive fan of the music they work for. And if they aren't when they start working for the artist, they become one, because that is what's required to kind of put in the 150% you're required to put in on a bad day. You need to be a full team, whatever artist you're with. Everybody's working together. Everybody loves it. Everybody makes it happen. And at least it's easier that way. You can obviously do something you dislike, but it's going to be pretty hard to do the amount of work that's required in that position. Okay. So you figure out what you want to do. Maybe you're just like, all right, I want to work for a DJ.
Let's say you are super interested in electronic music. Electronic music, because it is a small group, you are more than likely going to have to take on multiple roles. You have to be able to set up things technically. If you have to roll in and kind of set up the Pioneer rig, kind of get the DJ going, get him, make sure that everything that he required on his rider is there, or her rider. And then you have to also kind of be interested in the business side, because you are going to be the person that is going to be taking over that aspect of the touring as well. It's like when you're working with a small group, you kind of have to take multiple roles under your belt, execute them perfectly, because you are that person. When you do that, a lot of times you will kind of be compensated for that, and it kind of is cool, but you also have to have all of those skill sets up to a professional level to be up to qualified for said job.
After you kind of figure out what world you want to work in, maybe it's DJ, maybe it's country, maybe it's rap, whatever it is, you're going to have to know that going into this, you really have to have your shit together for the most part, because no one is going to tell you how to do your job. They're not going to tell you what you're doing wrong or right. They're just going to kind of fire you. And traveling is hard. Easy things become difficult. Going to Rite Aid becomes a task. And the last thing you want to be doing is worrying about how to get your job done, because you have so much stuff to do every day. So now that we've told you the different kind of groups and worlds within touring, let's talk about like what the different jobs you can do on tour are. So I don't know, Neil, let's start with a DJ. And I know it's going to change. Like the bigger the tour, the more jobs there are, it's going to scale. And the smaller the tour, the less jobs there are. Or rather, the job you do, like you said, is going to require
right.
you to do multiple things. And as it gets bigger, people specialize. So like in a DJ world, like what are the different jobs that exist?
I think if you're going on a DJ tour, electronic music tour, you have to have a tour manager.
Yeah.
And then you have to have someone that's going to be there to make sure that outside of the tour manager, you have to be there, someone there to help with the technical aspect of things and make sure that everything on the stage is correct. Maybe a sound guy. There's not too many jobs on an electronic tour if it's on the smaller side.
Yeah. And then usually, honestly, the other next two things they pick up, I think, are a VJ. So like somebody who does their visuals and
yeah.
a photographer, because they love that stuff. So I know we're going to go in depth later in the podcast, but just to give people an idea of what it means when we say tour manager, do you want to kind of walk them through like what a tour manager's
a tour manager is the person that knows every answer to all of the questions, or at least they should. They're the person that advances. Yeah. And they should.
they
are the person that advances everything as down to the writer. And the writer is what you ask for in order to perform your show, which for some people, it could be as little as I want peanut butter and jelly and I need some waters
and Cheetos.
And then it can be as elaborate as some of like the big artists are like, I want brown M&Ms, whatever. So that's your writer. The tour manager advances the writer. The tour manager advances your stage plot, which is what you need on stage to perform your show. And The tour manager also handles all of the travel, all of the equipment, all of the logistics, all of the things that it takes to make that show happen that day. They're the person that should have every answer to all of the questions.
Yeah, they do like all the thinking for you so you can just perform. And I think it's funny, like sometimes people will say they're a glorified babysitter. And I'm sure you can really, yeah, sure I mean, you're the artist, you know
as,
how it goes sometimes.
As someone who has been in the artist role of this whole scenario, like it takes a lot to be creative every single night and perform in a new place every single day and give a performance that's worth someone paying for. And you don't want to think about all these things that could be going wrong or going right. You just want to perform. The tour manager is there to make sure all of those things are happening smoothly. They take the brunt of what is going wrong and they try to fix it before it even gets to the artist. That is the tour manager. They're the one that is in control of all of the other jobs beneath them, which is what we're going to get into next, but they are the person in control.
They kind of oversee everything, right? And then as the tour gets bigger, a lot of these jobs bleed into other jobs. So I know we said like a tour manager handles advancing stage plots, but sometimes as you get to a bigger tour, the production manager will handle that. Or it just depends. So a lot of stuff that we'll say, it's very interchangeable and very, it depends on the circumstances. And there was one term, Neil, that maybe it's just me. Sometimes I'm like, was I just slow to learn this? Or maybe everybody doesn't learn it, but advancing. Is that like a known term?
No, I could see that would be something that would be like kind of specific to this world, and maybe not even specific to this world, but it just means that you are going to call ahead and make sure that whoever is doing all of the buying for the writer, whoever is just setting things up, whoever is renting equipment has the things that are necessary for when you get there. So you're going to hit them up in advance, make sure they have all of these things. They're going to buy everything that is necessary for your writer and have it there when you get there.
Yeah. And tour managers send a lot of emails. Like they work constantly. If they're not doing something in person at the show, they're writing emails to the next venue for, you know, whatever else you might
need. This is something that I also wanted to kind of like talk about earlier, but touring is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job. Even when you're off,
oh my God,
you're kind of on. You're still out on the road. You're away from your family. It is something that never ends. It is a lot of hard work. It is not for the faint of heart. It is a lot. And it is always on. That's the biggest thing. And usually when you work at home, like you go to work, you come off, you leave and you go home from your job and then you can be off. When you're on tour, if you're specifically a tour manager, you're never really off. You're working 24/7. Mm-hmm. You're in your hotel room sending emails. You're at the venue making sure shit's happening smoothly. You're advancing things for the next show the day before or the week before. It's just, you're constantly on. It's just what happens.
Yeah, it's a very go, 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 ready to work kind of mentality. But that's why we're saying if you love what you're doing, it makes this stuff so much less painful and less of a task and more of almost like you're passionate about it. And it's a nice place to be. Okay, so we started with DJ/electronic tour. And we said, you know, they have a tour manager, a production manager, somebody who's basically in charge of everything they're doing. Other than that, they have usually a VJ. And a VJ is, honestly, I didn't even hear of it until I toured with DJs. Because in your world, it's mostly just the lighting guy for like bands, right?
I don't know, video tech or whatever.
That's it. Like a production manager that helps with whatever's going on stage. But DJs have LED walls so consistently that they usually have somebody with them that just feeds that content. And that's what a VJ is, a visual jockey. Is that what it stands for? I never really thought of that. I just called it that. But they are there to make sure that everything looks awesome while you play your show, no matter where you go.
Which is super important, especially if that is a huge part of your show. Like they, I would say, as important as the artist. Like they have to be on. They have to be out there performing and doing their thing. And it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, because as an artist, if something goes wrong because of something else, it's not something that you want to be on the other side of. I'm just being honest. Yeah, because it's their art. It's their
people get angry.
It's what they see in their head outside of their head. It's like externalized vision, you know, and you're there to help the artist do that. And artists are sometimes tough to work for. So, yeah.
All right. Going to this podcast, I promised myself that I would kind of show people, not just tell them. So I don't know. I'm not trying to sound conceited or full of myself, but I want to give you an example that like, when I traveled with Diplo and in the DJ world, and he's a pretty massive DJ. So I felt like I got a very good understanding of what it's like to do it and do it very well. And even somebody on his level only traveled with me, a photographer/videographer, a tour manager, a visual person, and an assistant. And that's it. And that's four people. So even somebody that's massive, he just had four people with him. Yeah. That always blew my mind because I came from your world, Neil, where I was like, we'd have minimum like 12 people. Even when we were smaller, we had 12 people. And it got up to like 20 or 25, depending on the tour. And I was like, wow, he just literally can hop in a jet, go to a show, plug in and play. And it was such a tight group. Like everybody just hung out. And then we go on tour and everybody would do their job, work really hard. No questions asked. Nobody ever complains about their job. Gets
so you're
it done
saying
then,
that I should get into electronic music?
Yes.
Millionaire.
Yes, you need to stop.
You heard it here right first.
Yeah, but I mean, so we've got tour manager / production manager. We've got visual designer, a lighting designer. I guess we can jump into that real fast. I know we're kind of jumping around, but a lighting designer is a band's version of a, I mean, DJs still have lighting designers too, but I mean, they are the ones who it blew my mind when I learned this. Yep. Everything you see at a concert is on purpose. For the most part, all those lights are taken care of by somebody at front of house, which is the area in the middle of the venue that techie people sit with big control boards and control what's on stage. And they choose everything that goes on stage, the lights, the colors, the direction they're going, how much fog's on stage.
Everything
all
is,
this is
on purpose. Everything has
it's
a reason.
Crazy.
It's like even down to when you're coming into the venue and the lights are kind of low and there's like a few lights above you. And then when you get in there and then the show's about to start and then the lights get even dimmed down, it's like, every decision that happens is happening for a reason. And each of those things goes back to a certain job, like you're saying, you know. So the lighting is a huge part of the mood of the show. It is, I think in itself, it is a complete artistic job. Like you have to be an artist to be a lighting designer, straight up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard. And you also have to be so good at technology. Like the people that do that stuff are so talented. You have to be so good at it. Like, you don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the best. You just have to be so good and want it so bad that in any given situation, you're performing at 150%. They try so hard to make these, like, I mean, those shows are not hard to design. I mean, excuse me, those shows are not easy to design.
You have to be some kind of artist. Like, you have to have some sense of rhythm. You have to have some sense of color blending. Like, it's not just like you're a sound engineer, you're worrying about sound. You're a lighting designer. You are creating something that photographers can take a picture of, but it has to be on beat. If there's things that happen like on time, they have to be on time or you kind of lose the effect. There's so many things that go into it. They are artists in themselves. It's a very involved job, 100%.
And to give you guys a good example of how something might scale, I think a lighting designer is a really good example. Because right, Neil, when you start out, sometimes the tour managers will double as lighting designers because it just involves going to this small venue, let's say 200 people or 100 people, maybe less, going to the front of house area and mashing on a few keys whenever there's a beat, right? Then when it gets to a high level concert, like you're talking arena, that stuff is programmed. Somebody designed that probably isn't even on tour. And then the lighting designer that's on tour just presses play and makes sure nothing messes up. So that's just kind of how crazy a job can change from depending on how small or large the artist is. All right, cool. Well, I think that's most of, I guess we could talk about personal assistant because that's a pretty important job in the DJ world. I mean, it's different than a tour manager. It's pretty similar. So a tour manager makes a lot of decisions and kind of does a lot of logistics like Neil was talking about. But a personal assistant is more, I mean, they're assisting the DJ. Or in your case, you guys will have like a personal assistant for the whole band. I don't know, if you're not used to the music world, people might think that sounds kind of like bougie. How can you break it down to them?
So when you're touring and you're in a new place every single day, the personal assistant is kind of the liaison that kind of works with the artist. They have a very good relationship with this person or a group of people. They communicate with them daily. They know what they like. They have their best interests in mind. They're like, this person likes this, this person likes that. They have those things memorized and then they go out and talk to the different people in each place to get those things done. Because when you're an artist, you're usually existing backstage, you're existing at the hotel. This is your life, you know, like you are doing these things and this is your home. This is where you're going to be comfortable. You don't really go out. You can't just go out and go to the mall.
You can't go out, right? It's not that you don't want to. It's that you literally can't because maybe it's not safe or maybe you're too popular.
There's a million different reasons as to why you can't go out, but you just can't.
Yeah.
You can't leave this area, whether it's the hotel or the backstage. And so you have to have a person that can kind of go and talk to these different people that are able to get these different jobs done for the artist or the crew or whatever.
What are some of the jobs? Like, we've been a little bit not descriptive and maybe people don't know what those jobs are. Like, I know we have an idea, but can you...
Absolutely. So, as far as I'm concerned, like, you need all the creature comforts, all of the things that you need as a human being. For real.
Creature comforts. I like that.
So like, you need laundry done. And a lot of times when you're traveling, like maybe you can't go to a hotel and get it done, or maybe there's a spot in the venue that they can make it happen, but you need laundry done. It's just what has to happen. You need to eat, you know, sometimes there's catering, sometimes there's not. Sometimes you don't want to eat what's at catering because of like dietary restrictions or personal preference, whatever. So you need those kind of needs met as well. Maybe you are backstage and a new video game came out that day. And if you were at home, you would just go get it like normal. But you're not at home, you're out on tour and you're playing these shows and you can't just leave. So you hit up the personal assistant and be like, hey, I really want this new video game that just came out. Could you go get it for me? Or
yeah,
it's just a person that kind of helps you with the creature comforts and helps you feel like you're at home, but you're out on tour. That's really what their whole entire job is to make sure that you're comfortable, make sure that everyone around you is comfortable. Everyone gets what they need. Maybe you have guests coming that day. They can help communicate with the guests and get them backstage to you. Because a lot of times when you're at a venue, it's not just as simple as go to the Coke machine, turn right, and the door's right there. It's like a giant maze of backstage, and only that PA or the personal assistant knows how to get that person back to you. So they do all kinds of things to make sure that the artist or the crew gets the little creature comforts that make them feel at home.
And I think that sometimes it can be confusing for people to like, well, you have a tour manager, why can't they do all that? And you know, when you're starting, they might, but a tour manager job is mostly to make sure that the show happens and that everybody is able to get to where they need to go to do their job. Personal assistant's job is to make sure that the artist is able to do the show and just worry about that because they've taken care of everything else that would take up time or energy or just not be possible without them. Like we said at the beginning, not as specialized. As you get bigger, much more specialized jobs. Everything gets a job because the small jobs become a more prominent part of the touring.
Well, time is of an essence. That's the other thing about touring is
yes,
everything is to a schedule. If you're even off by a couple minutes, it throws everything else off. So everything has to happen in a timely manner, and even down to these specialized jobs. So like smaller touring, tour manager can handle most of these things because it doesn't take a lot of time to get those needs
done. There's not as much to do.
And then as you get bigger, the needs are much larger. They take up more time and everything still has to happen on the same time schedule. You still got to load in and be there to open doors at 6 p.m. You still got to go on stage at 9 p.m. and you still got to be off stage by 11 p.m. no matter what size the show is.
I'm laughing because I'm looking at our show notes, which is a document Neil and I share while we do this. And Connor's in here. And Connor's the guy who edits everything. And I don't know what he's doing, but do you see that pink?
I just saw that.
Highlighter? I was like, Connor, what are you doing?
Hi, Connor.
He's at work right now. So, hey, Connor. He's going to have a fun time editing this one. We are going for today. Cool. So we're kind of using these different groups as, you know, a vessel to discuss the different jobs that exist. And we started with DJ. I mean, I think if we jump to band, we're going to cover everything. So let's go to hip hop. What jobs exist in hip hop that are more important than other jobs?
Security. I think when it comes to that world, security is a huge part of making sure that the artist gets to and from the hotel, to and from the venue safely.
They always have so many security guards.
And it's a completely different world. Awesome. I mean, like they rap about real world things and they do real world things outside of that. And people want to check them on those things that they talk about, all the topics. A lot of times they involve violence, blah, 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 drugs, whatever. But they have to be kept safe no matter what. They're there to do a show. The security team is there to make sure that that happens.
And other kinds of musicians will get security, but it's usually not until they're pretty big artists. A lot of time in the hip hop world, they'll get security very early on. It's the equivalent of, I would say, like a photographer or a videographer in the DJ world. They get them right away because
it's necessary.
Yeah, it's necessary. And a lot of the time, you know, they'll wear nice jewelry or they'll do things that require security. But every show I've ever photographed of a hip hop artist always has a security guard stage left and stage right. So if you ever go to a hip hop show, like, why are these massive men standing on stage? That's their security guards and that's their personal security, not the venue security. So those people go everywhere with them. And their job is, like, I remember when we travel with larger artists like Blink or something, their security is insane. Yes. Like, they're trained in making sure there's no bombs. They're trained in, and they're waking up every morning 3 hours before the band gets up and briefing their security on where they're going that day. And they have escape routes and all these things planned. So when you get to higher levels, it becomes a big deal because you're traveling with artists that worth a lot of money and they're sought. People want to get close to them.
They're very popular. And anytime people want to do something to hurt or to cause a big commotion, they're looking for these said artist because it will make a big splash in the news. So they have to have security.
Or they just want to get close because they're big fans.
There's tons of different reasons as to why it can happen, but popularity brings in a whole new slew of problems.
Things that need solving. Okay, cool. So after that, let's talk about Banworld. Banworld's a little bit different. The music we've talked about so far, generally hip-hop and electronic, is different than Banworld because the instruments aren't usually played live, right? There's usually one source of what's being played live. It's a vocal mic and then, you know, a track. That's about it. With music, it becomes way more moving parts. You've got guitars, drums, bass, vocals, anything that's on stage. So with that, you get a ton of different jobs. And I don't know where to start. I guess, why don't we just start off with the guitar tech?
So basically, any instrument needs a tech to set it up and make sure that it is working correctly. It is maintained properly. It travels from one place to another. It gets set up and it is there when the artist walks on stage. So I think a guitar tech, a drum tech, bass tech, they all kind of fall under the same category, but they're just making sure that the instruments are there in working order. Everything is perfect for when the artist walks on stage. They can just put the thing on. They have confidence to play their part, to do their thing, to put on the show that they're there to put on.
Perform. Yeah. And we always often talk about scaling, and that's important here because when artists start, and Neil knows this, they do their own teching. And that's because when you start out, it's not as big of a deal. You might have less instruments. Your songs might change, correct me if I'm wrong, tuning less.
You just don't have money.
Or you just change it at the beginning of the song on your own.
You just...
Yeah. And you just can't afford it.
I think a lot of times that's really what it comes down to is you just don't have the money to pay for someone to do that for you. And you still might have the same amount of tunings. You still might have to do all this extra work, but you just don't have the means to pay for that.
And then as you get bigger, we could argue that having an in-tune guitar is much more important when you're playing to, you know, 100,000 people rather than 100 people. Then it becomes somebody's sole job, and that's kind of when we talk about scaling. So guitar tech, drum tech, bass tech, they're all similar. They all, their daily schedule is basically in the morning, they load the gear in. Throughout the day, they set it all up, and then they tune it. They get it ready for sound check, and then the show later, and then they close it all up, and they take care of all that gear, and that's their job. And if anything goes wrong during the show,
it is
also
their responsibility.
Pretty crucial role.
It's a lot.
And I think like with all these jobs, and you can definitely echo me on this, it's why it's important to be good at what you do. But the most important part is just to get out there and start doing it, because there's so many things you just have to learn.
Exactly. You even if you just listened to this podcast, you wouldn't know everything, because even if we sat here and here's all I'm saying. Even if you sat here and we put each thing and broke it down to hours and hours of talking about it, we would still miss things that just come up day of. You cannot be prepared for everything. You just have to go out there and do it. You have to be prepared to go with the flow. You got to just take with what is given to you. It's like not every day you have all the space in the world to set up your guitar world or set up drum world. And these things are just terms like to describe, like guitar world is like, that's where all the guitars live. Drum world, that's where all the drum live. You don't have all the space in the world, and you have to just make do with what you have. And you just have to be able to go with the flow. That's a lot of times that skill in itself is you just have to be out on the road to do that.
Yeah. And if there's ever any terms that you don't know that we talk about, let us know, because we will tell you them and we will take note, because sometimes we just don't realize. And that's why it's cool having both of us here. I like that we can be like, yo, tell them what that means. And you can,
because I'll just sit here and talk like the most fucking tech language ever.
Yeah. We don't realize the jargon that we talk in constantly.
Yeah. It is its own language, but
you'll get it. All right, moving on. You know, you're going to have to explain this one, because as much as I know that it exists, I don't know the significance of it. So can you explain monitors to people? Because it's important. As a viewer, once you know about this, you're going to see it every show you go to.
The monitor world, which is basically you have a person who controls an entire soundboard from the side of the stage, and it's just for the people playing. So a lot of times each artist, instrumentalist, musician, whatever, I don't know.
Every person on stage performing,
they need their own mix, because in order for them to do what they're doing the best, they need to hear what they need to hear. So me being a guitar player, I'm a rhythm guitar player. So a rhythm guitar player takes care of a lot of the rhythm duties as far as the guitar playing goes. It's not the technical stuff. It's not the like the ting ting leads. It's more of the backing, you know, it's that part. So I don't need to hear the leads to play my part. A lot of times I'll have the other guitar player in our band, Kevin, I'll have him turn down. I don't even listen to what he's playing. I have the singer in my in-ears, which is the monitors that are in your ears. I'll have the drums, I have my guitar, and I have my vocal. I need those things just to know where I'm at in the song, and I need to hear them to make sure everything is happening properly. And that's basically what it comes down to with any person on stage. Singer needs to hear his voice to make sure he's singing on tune. He needs to hear the bass guitar to make sure he's on key, and he needs to hear the drums to make sure that he's on beat. Same with the bass guitar player, mm-hmm. same with the drummer, and so forth. And everyone needs their own mix. So you need to have a monitor engineer, which basically caters to every person on stage. And a lot of times, if you're in a big enough group, you can bring your own monitor engineer on tour with you. Or if not, then you have the house monitor engineer and you don't have in-ears. You usually just have loud wedges on stage and they're just blasting whatever you need really loudly at you.
I always think of myself as getting stuff pretty late. So sometimes when it's something I don't understand, other people are like, yeah, we get it. And I'm like, okay, well, I just didn't. The reason you have to have monitors is because the sound is playing through speakers that are facing out the crowd and the band just can't
hear it. Behind it.
And not only that, and there's an advantage, like Neil was saying, of them being able to hear certain parts so that they can work together as a team to put on the show. The monitor tech's job is to basically mix what they hear while the show is happening just to make sure that it's all correct constantly. And you can
you're absolutely right.
And the wedges you're talking about are when a band is smaller, they don't have in-ears. They don't have plugs in their ears that give them music. They have just wedges on stage that play music in their direction. And it's loud.
And as you get bigger, you can get more specialized. And so having in-ears not only protects your ears, but it allows you to have a more specialized mix anywhere on stage. So if you would do a lot of running around, you can make sure that your mix stays with you wherever you go. So like if I'm a guitar player, I play stage right, which is the left side of the stage. It's really weird. I want to run over to the other side of the stage. My mix will go with me in my in-ears. Where if you have wedges, that doesn't happen. And you usually kind of have to stay pretty set in where you're playing.
That's pretty localized. And if you've ever seen an artist, no matter what the size, even a singer, touch their ear while they're performing live or take something out of their ear, that's because their mix was bad or they can't hear it or they're trying to hear the audience. There's something going on. If you ever wondered why artists always touch their ears, that's what's going on.
Yeah, because a lot of times when you're singing, like having that mix in your ear, you can't even hear yourself. So if the mix is off, you take it out and then you can hear yourself because you can just hear yourself singing. I want to know what it's like to be able to sing.
Just in general?
Yeah.
Dude, I was doing audio check before you got here and I like recorded because my audio was not so great last week. And I just started singing because I was just doing whatever and I wasn't thinking about it. And then I listened to it back and I was like, God, that's
it's
bad.
Really funny to hear your voice. I actually watched a video about this and this is kind of off topic, but who cares? That's what podcasts are for.
Yeah.
So it was basically talking about you don't actually hear yourself whenever you sing. So in order to like hear yourself when you sing, if you do this and block it out.
And Neil right now, for those of you who are listening to the podcast, he's putting his hands on his cheeks.
Yeah, so like you block your own ears. And this is what it sounds like for everyone else
check.
To hear your voice. So if you want to sing and hear how everyone else hears you, you just have to block your own direct feed from your mouth to your ears.
Oh, cool. I always thought I would like plug my ears.
You can, it can, but it just like blocks out certain frequencies that are good and bad. Yeah.
Probably for the best. We're just going over like the top 12-ish jobs you can have on tour here. Keep in mind, like when tours get to arena level, you literally have somebody on tour that's your accountant. Their job is just to count the money every day. So it gets really specialized. another one we have is front of house. You want to knock this one out too, actually? I think
front of house is basically what monitors do, but for the crowd. You know, their whole entire job is to make sure that there is a mix of audio that everyone in the entire audience, no matter where they are, they're up in the rafters or they're down on the floor, they can hear everything really well and they're really excited by the music that's coming out of the speakers.
You can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, actually. They mix it live too sometimes. Like they'll add effects in certain places or turn on your auto-tune and, you know.
What's auto-tune? No artist uses that.
I don't know, man. No, never.
Yeah, they can cue all that stuff.
And unless I'm missing anything, the last thing we have here is photographer, videographer.
I think that you would be a great person to talk about what a photographer or a videographer does for a live artist.
Yeah, in my job, that's what I do when I tour. I'm a photographer, a little bit of video, but not so much. Sometimes there's somebody who does both of them. Sometimes one person does two. Like we were saying this whole time, it really scales as the artist gets bigger and the job becomes more important. But a lot of people will bring photographers and videographers on tour before they even get like a tour manager now because of how important social media was. But when I started, we were like the least important. Not important at all as far as getting the show to happen.
Let's be real.
As far as the artist is
when
concerned.
When you came on tour with A Day to Remember, we were one of the first artists to understand the importance of a photographer on tour. And you always travel with the band. You never were like stuck in like some other
Yeah, well, always got to be a party.
And that's the thing is, like, in order to catch those moments of vulnerability and those moments that people really want to see that they don't usually get a chance to see, is to have a photographer there. And it's super important, I think. And I think, like you said, as we get more into the social media world, it will become even more important. But it is one of the most important jobs, I think, on tour. With that being said, Adam, we can't give you a raise. Sorry.
Thanks. When I first started, like in 2007, it wasn't like a job that really even existed. So it's really grown over the past few years, and they document what happens and then the artist posts it online or saves it for a documentary or does whatever they need to do with it. It just create content for the artist. And the fun part about them is there's things called A party, B party, C party. So as you get with bigger artists and you travel in different accommodation, the photographer usually for the most part stays with the artist, not with the crew. And that's kind of fun because you generally get nicer places to stay because you spend more time there and you're with the artist who spends more time there, as the crew is usually at the venue and stuff. It's a fun job. And I can't stress how much it doesn't matter how good you are at these jobs as much as it matters that you get along with the people you work with. And that's kind of the underlying theme. Like, you have to be good. Like, you have to really give 150%, but you don't have to be
the best.
You
have to be good enough to be considered for the job to begin with. But once you're there, you have to be a great person to be around. It's really as important as it is learning the skill.
Yeah, no, that's true. Okay, so I think we missed one thing, actually, Neil. Can you guess what it is?
Let me look. No.
I'm going to type one letter.
Masturbation. Merchandise.
Yeah, merch is actually like a pretty
merchandise
big deal.
Merchandise is a humongous deal. I think that when it comes to any kind of live artist, you're basically a glorified t-shirt company. You're making songs to help you sell t-shirts.
Yeah, merch is a big part of making money.
It is. And the way that record deals are set up these days, you have to have a good merch person on tour with you in order to make any kind of money. It's how you're going to be paying a lot of the bills. They are the person that is going to be the direct connection between the fans and the artist. They are a person that represents that group. They handle all of the money. They handle all of the stock. They handle a ton of responsibility. It's a really hard job.
Yeah. And at the beginning, they do everything, right? They load in the merch, they count it in, they sell it, they put it on the wall. And then as it gets bigger, they kind of become the overseeing person for it, where they make sure that every, you know, when you, if you've ever gone to arena concert, you know, there's like 20 different merch booths, basically make sure that all those people have the required amount of merch they need throughout the day to be able to sell and make money. So they become in charge of that. So the job changes as the artist gets bigger, but yeah, it's such an integral part of touring business model.
And with all of these jobs, like, I think that Adam has kind of mentioned it as we've been talking about it, but they all can start on a very small scale. And if you're interested in any of these different things, you can grow within each position. You know, there's levels of a guitar tech where you're traveling in the van with the band, you're setting up the stuff. It's very small, sweaty shows, but then you can go all the way up to being a guitar tech for like AC/DC or Green Day or some of the biggest artists in the world. Day to Remember. I mean, just to name a few.
Just throwing out a few.
No, but every single level of any of these jobs, you can exist, you can start. What you're willing to put into each of these jobs is the limit that you're willing to reach, you know, that you're able to reach, I should say.
All right, so before we jump to the next part, masturbation.
Sorry, Connor.
It was funny because Connor also logged in as me afterwards because he has my Google login, and I saw another Adam Amakais on the document. I was like, Connor, again? Now that you know, you decide, I want to be on tour, I want to go on tour, these are the jobs I can gun for, you know what the options are, you're probably wondering, like, what is the map? Like, what does it look like? And we kind of want to give you a basic overview of what it looks like to go from couch to van to bus to tour. And it's really hard. You can't really apply for the job. It's not like most jobs, not yet. We're kind of trying to solve that with this setup. Like, that's our goal here, is to give a little more foundation, or rather a system, to getting hired. Like, we want to have a place where people can go and hire people for tour. But there are so many paths to getting on tour currently, and none of them are wrong. There's just a right path depending on where you live, what your skill set is, who you know, what you're doing. And I think we could start off by saying probably the most popular and easiest one to make happen by your own decisions is the organic route, which is like starting local, growing, and then meeting more people and doing a good job and then meeting more people and kind of going it that way. And it takes a long time. I mean, it's kind of nice. It takes a long time because you can't really fall off, right? Like if your connection to touring is one person and they hook you up and then you don't know anybody else and they fire you, you're just done. But if you have like this system, this network of people that you know and you've grown with them, it's really hard to not be employed. If you want to, you want to add on to that, Neil?
Yeah, I think that you also can not make enough mistakes, you know, growing the organic way. You make all these mistakes, and as long as you keep doing it and growing and you have a good attitude about it, you're going to be someone that someone wants to have around. They're like, yeah, like, you know, he's not the best at it or she's not the best at it, but they're willing to learn. They're awesome to hang out with and they're just a hard worker. That's all that matters, really.
Mm-hmm. No, agreed. One of the biggest misconceptions, I think, is that you can kind of go to school for this, get really good, and then somebody's going to hire you. I don't know a parallel, but I feel like that barely ever happens.
Yeah.
I know some people are like it happens to a certain percentage who are like freaky good. Like you have to be a master. And then they're like, we want that person. They're very good. But for the most part, like that's just a really hard route to take, I feel like.
A lot of times the money that you pay to go to school doesn't equate to the job that you're going to get as soon as you get out of school. It's like kind of uneven as far as what you put in versus what you get out. And the organic route where you're the guy that can fix people's guitar around town and people know you at the local music venue and you're engraved in your local scene and you're friends with a lot of people that are bands that are coming up. It's a lot easier because the only thing that you have invested is time. And obviously that's not, it's not the same as money, but it's worth as much, if not more, you know, and everyone has time when you're starting out. You can go and be a part of these local scenes. You can become friends with people and you can go and meet and be involved in your local scene without having money. You can do that, I think, better, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and it might mean hitting up somebody who's local who's a guitar tech or hitting up somebody who does security at the venue. It just all starts with reaching out to people and trying to intern for them or work under them or see how you can learn by getting some hands-on experience. That's what we mean when we say start local. Start by just doing. Start by doing things in your community. And you want to just get good enough at your job so you can speak the language, you can understand what's going on, and then get out there and start learning. The other routes you can take are, Neil, you know this because you're a guitar tech, but being friends with somebody is actually, you can't really force this, but sometimes people just get lucky and they're just
friends. That's kind of what I was saying, like as being involved in the local scene, like you just are friends with people. And then as the need arises, they're like, oh, I know this guy. He's my friend. We go to shows together all the time. He's really great at working on guitars. He loves guitar.
Yeah.
Maybe this could work out with what I need, you know? And for instance, my guitar tech, Max, he was my roommate. He loved playing guitar. He played guitar in his own band. The guitar tech I had before Max, he was going to go become a chef and he was stepping away from the touring world. And I was like, Max, do you want to fill in for this show? You're my friend. I don't know if the job extends further than this show, but hey, let's try it out. And that was how he applied for the job, was coming and being like, work this show that's super important for our band. And if you do a good job, maybe there's more for you.
And that's how like a lot of the jobs I hear that people get are, unless you've already been touring for a long time, sometimes it becomes a little bit more formal, like, hey, we know you're good at this, but we want to make sure it fits our thing. It's so casual. It's so like, hey, come do this. And you just have to make sure that when that opportunity rises, you're ready to walk through that door and you're ready to kind of take advantage of it, because it will happen. If you're doing good work, being a good person, you know, learning as much as you can and staying active in the local scene, it will work out. It just takes a little bit.
What's the quote? It's like luck is where opportunity and hard work come together. It's like you're able to take advantage of it.
Can we just say that's it?
Maybe that is it.
Jamie, can you look it up?
Young Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie, can you?
Or luck is where opportunity and hard work come together. Opportunity being like Max was my friend. He was already one of the best guitar players I ever met. He was ready to take advantage of said opportunity. The opportunity came available. That is where luck, to someone that doesn't know what's going on and they look at this out, they're like, man, I really want to be a guitar tech. And they look at Max's path. And they're like, man, he's really lucky to be able to work for a Data member. It's like, man, if you only knew what went into this scenario happening, it wasn't luck at all. And you can make your own luck.
Luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity.
Yes, exactly. You looked it up.
Yeah, I said
Young Jamie, look it up.
I have the internet.
Now, Adam, we are in the early stages of our podcast. Adam is a man of many hats. He is the producer.
Yes.
He is Young Jamie. He is the co-host. He is the audio engineer for himself.
That's a good parallel, Neil.
What can I say?
And luckily we have an editor. We only have an editor because it's not because I'm lucky. It's because I set myself up for this. I prepared a lot for this moment. And that's why we have the things that we have. So this is that is a good analogy. I agree with that. And we had Steve help us with audio. All these things I've been preparing for years. Well, we've been preparing for
years. Well, anyone looking
at
us could be like, man, they're really lucky they have all these connections. But really, it's not luck at all. It's through these connections of being a good person.
A lot of hard work.
It's through working with these people and making these connections outside of this and then being able to enterprise these things into what is now Don't Shit on the Bus, the podcast, starring Adam L. Macias and Neil Westphal.
It'd be really funny if it was like we got like however many listeners we get first week and then second week we got none.
They're like, I really didn't like the first week, so I didn't come back. We're like, thank you.
It's like, you guys have a great idea, but the way you executed it was subpar, suboptimal, and not worth my time, even though
it's
I'm
like
driving.
This. I really like the idea, but I really don't like you guys.
Yeah. Could you guys hire, you know how you want to like get people who specialize? Could you get people who specialize in
hosting,
talking? Yeah, because you suck at it. That would be so funny. Yo, this is hard. I would say that like this is us trying our hardest. So if it's bad, just know we're
trying.
This
is episode 2. If it's bad, fuck you. How about that?
Yeah, all right.
No,
that's fair.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I think
it's going to get better every week.
That's what's cool about this. And like, if you're interested in touring, this is very much the same thing. But for us, we're interested in podcasts. We're interested in teaching people. We're interested in coming up with something that doesn't exist and learning.
And learning.
It is what it is. And it's episode 2. It's going to be fucking better. Episode 222. It's going to be the best fucking episode that ever happened. And then episode 576 is going to be exponentially better than episode 222. So just come along for the journey. That's what it is.
Wow. That's years from now. I'm down. The one thing I'm not looking forward is the time one of us forgets to hit record.
Oh shit.
No. I've checked multiple times. I think every time before we start, we might have to take screenshots of our recording thing to prove that we're recording. I think that'd be a good way to avoid it, because think about what we'd have to do. We'd literally like we'd do a better job probably the second time, or maybe worse, but we'd have to do.
You know what I'm
going
to do? You know what I think we should do one of these days? You talked to me about it the other day. Well, you mentioned something similar and it kind of gave me an idea. You're like, we should listen to one of the podcasts live on stream. And I was like, what if we just record it, but then also go live and do the podcast live? We can edit it for the podcast, but then we actually have the live interactive aspect of it as well. And I think that could be really fun.
I think we should wait to do that to when we're
episode
like
12
a little bit better. Like today Connor was like trying to talk to me about something else before, and I was like, dude, I can't do it. I have to concentrate on the podcast. Like I just can't. I have so much mental energy for this. I'm going to be exhausted.
I'm the same way when I go live on stream. Mary's like, hey, do you want to go get dinner before stream? And I'm like, no, I have to go there and I have to practice and I have to get in the headspace of being live. It's a whole different thing that like people don't realize, because there's so many things to think about that go into it that no one even thinks about. And if it all goes correctly,
you'll never know.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So there's so many paths. That's what we were talking about, to get on tour. And the cool part is that once you get on tour, it's honestly pretty easy to stay on tour, because you're going to keep meeting people. You're going to grow with the artist. You're going to meet other artists, and you can kind of pull them all together from there. It's funny. Neil's
eating
a cookie right now. There's a video aspect.
They only know that if they're a part of the Patreon.
That's true. You only get that if you
subscribe. So join our Patreon if you want to see me eat cookies.
And that's kind of what we wanted to go over today. We wanted to know, like, wanted to teach you guys like what touring is. What qualifies you to get on tour? What are the different jobs that get on tour and the actual hiring process looks like? So more or less, to sum it up, there's a lot of different things you can do. Figure out what you want to do. Try to find a way you can start doing them in your local area and just keep doing that and do a good job. Don't be a dick. Don't shit on the bus.
Don't shit on the bus. Don't give up whenever it gets hard, and find new things that keep you interested in all of the things that you're interested in, because...
Mm-hmm. Study online, whatever you can do. And I would say while you're going about this, there's one principle rule that I hold pretty close to my heart and feel very strong about. And it goes in line with Don't Shit on the Bus. And that is that you need to be looking for how you can help other people all the time. A lot of people get in the trap with networking where they're trying to think of how other people can help them. And that's the wrong way to network. You need to think about how you can help other people and help them, and everything else will work out. But practice by giving, and people will return the favor, assuming you're giving to the right.
Yeah, practice by giving, and practice by following through. Practice by being someone that you would want to interact with. You know, be the person that you need out of yourself for other people.
And it's hard. Sometimes people find touring by accident, sometimes on purpose. Some people get breaks and they're on tour all of a sudden. You're like, well, I've been doing this for 5 years. Just figure out what works for you. Doesn't matter where you live. Doesn't matter what experience you have. You can make this happen. You have control over it.
Ultimately, control the things you can control and plan for the best. Hope for the best. Plan for the worst on the other things. And you'll be good.
Is that a saying? Plan for the worst?
Plan for the worst. Hope for the best.
Oh, wow. think I like to try to plan for.
That's what I'm saying, you know, as long as you just don't give in when it gets hard and you have a plan for if things go the most worst way that they could possibly go and then they don't go that way and you just hope for the best, then you'll be okay.
All right, cool. Sounds good to me. I learned something new today, boys.
Ultimately, just don't shit on the bus.
Yes. All right. Well, Neil, do you have anything else you want to say today, or are we good? We concluding today.
I feel
today?
Fully happy.
Cool. Well, I feel content.
You feel content?
I have been Adam Elmachias. Is that bad? I feel competent. No, that's bad too. I feel, yeah, content. Is content not nice?
It
bad?
Just means like the mediocre version of like existing.
Oh, I feel fulfilled.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I like that.
All right. We have fulfilled.
You said you had one goal and it was to do a podcast with me and you have done it.
I did it. My task for today is done. Well, I have been Adam Elmachias and I will always be Adam Elmachias.
I've been everything that I always will be. I'm not going to limit it to just Neil.
All right. We will catch you next week on Don't Shit on the Bus. Kevin Scaff, take us out.